You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for August 2nd, 2022. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of The Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is the webcast and podcast that digs deep into the clutter that piles up between you and the life you want to be living. We explore the habits and behaviors that lead to clutter, and we suggest strategies to slow the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we decide to keep.
If you're new to our Zoom meeting, we want to let you know that you can share your comments and questions via the chat feature, and I'll try to make sure Gail addresses them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature to let us know if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question yourself via audio or video. We're also streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can share your questions and comments there, and I'll relay them to Gail. We're going to start by talking about last week's weekly tittle on the subject of clothes closets. It was called Come Out of the Closet. The assignment was to focus on and reduce one category of clothes closet clutter. We'd love to hear from our participants live in Zoom and on Facebook. Who was able to discard or donate a few items of clothing this week? Please let us know in the comments. I made up my mind to downsize by one swimsuit this week. I've lost
one whole swimsuit.
I don't have a whole lot of clothes closet clutter to manage. But
yeah, you're not exactly a clothes hound.
Not a clothes horse, but I've been wearing a swimsuit that is now about two sizes too large for me, and finally decided that it's reaching the stage of being embarrassing. And so I've removed it from the rotation.
You can retire it now.
I will retire it now. I did want to share a comment from YouTube viewer Veronica. She said, "Thank you, Clutter Fairy. Your words of guidance have given me a sense that de-choking my closet is good and okay. I am finally reducing the clothes in my closet that I had promised myself to give away when I bought a few new clothes."
First of all, we're so glad that what we said meant that you could give yourself permission to de-choke the closet. And I really love that visual, by the way, de-choking the closet. With every item pulled from the closet, you're lessening the serious distress of choking. It's a great visual for the duress that a stuffed closet can cause and the relief that results from decluttering the closet. Secondly, congratulations for fulfilling that promise to yourself. It sounds like you're making some good headway in the closet. So congratulations. We're cheering for you. The Clutter Fairy team is cheering for you right now. Good job.
Marilyn said, discarded some great jackets that have gotten stained.
There you go. And Doesn't make a difference to walk around in a stained jacket.
Anita said, I reduced my folded clothes in my closet by about 30%. Underwear. Ooh. So, I don't know if that means Anita had an underwear surplus or she's just now going commando.
And please don't tell us, Anita. We want to just keep that as a secret of the universe. That's funny.
Ann said, sent a box off to ThredUp for potential resale.
Oh, good.
If they don't sell, they get donated.
That's awesome. Great.
Barbara said, I let go of two pairs of jeans. One was suitable for gardening, no longer have a garden.
There you go.
I wonder how many people hang on to the clothes that they've set aside for activities that they don't do anymore or do so rarely. You only need one outfit for that.
Yeah. And they keep 27 outfits. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do have that question. I have that discovery process often in closets where I, oh, that's the shirt that I paint in. And I'm like, are you doing a lot of painting?
Right.
Oh, those are all painting clothes. Like, is that your side hustle? You probably only need one shirt to paint in. You probably don't need 17.
Yeah. And having only one painting shirt is an additional incentive to get the painting done with quickly, because having to wear it day after day after day, you know, sort of
makes the job more unpleasant.
Yes. Marcia said, I flunked the tittle, but please keep up the encouragement and motivation.
Oh, that's okay. You can flunk the tittle. We don't expect 100% compliance. That's great.
Kat shared, for others in the Houston area, I use donatestuff.com. It's an easy way to schedule your donations to be picked up by a charity of your choosing. No work beyond your own cleanup. That's good to know. Donatestuff.com.
Right. And what a great idea to let somebody come to the house and take it away from you so you don't even have to drive. You can just hand it out or leave it out or whatever they do to make it disappear. Awesome.
Lise said, cleared out an overpacked drawer. It looks so spacious now.
Right. Isn't the air always surprising when there's like room in there and it's not, it doesn't explode when you pull the drawer out?
And Joni said, I started in on shoes right after last week's Zoom. I expected to hear more reports on shoes.
Right.
Considering the statistics we collected about our shoes.
About shoe collection.
Our shoe saturation issue. Joni said, I donated the ones that were good enough and threw away many others. It feels weird throwing away shoes, but it had to be done.
Right. Because the fact that you still have them in the closet doesn't mean that anybody could actually put them on their feet and walk in them.
I do understand it, though, because they're so expensive and it's a lot of work to find shoes that fit. And are comfortable and look nice. You know, it's a chore to find shoes that tick all the boxes. So once you got them, it's hard to let go of them.
It's true. But congratulations on doing it. I'm super proud of you because they have a large footprint. They take up a lot of space and they demand management. They don't stack well. They don't, you know, it's like there's all sorts of problems with shoes because of their shape and size, and managing them is difficult. And so it's not like hanging up a pair of pants. It's like, you know, haha, yes, it has a large footprint. Right. Exactly.
Yes, it does.
And so they get in the way. And so if you can reduce that volume, good for you, because it makes a big difference on the floor.
And let me just say, large footprint, size 14 double E.
Yes, that would be Ed's big foot.
if I want to take more than the pair of shoes I'm wearing, I pretty much have to check a bag because they would take up an entire carry-on.
Right? And it is a truth. Men's shoes are so much bigger than women's shoes in particular. They are a major management problem in somebody's closet. It's like a regular shoebox size, but a boot size box is, so it's extra wide for men's shoes, and sitting them on the shelf and a little bitty shelf, and you can have two pairs of shoes and the shelf is full.
The end.
Because they're so big. Yeah. It is a problem.
Lots of good tittle reports today. Lynn says, getting rid of my former teacher blouses and slacks that I don't want to look at and will never wear again. Several were from thread up to begin with.
That's awesome. And the idea of like, okay, I'm not a teacher anymore. This is not, I don't have to dress for that part of my life anymore because I've moved on. And having the clothes remind you of that and not having to look at it anymore. What a relief that's going to be. Now that they're out of there, you're going to go in the closet and there's nothing that's going to make you frown when you go in the closet. That's awesome. Good job.
Susie said, I threw away some old worn and or stained clothes. I have some clothes in a bag to donate. Maybe I'll take them by the SA today, Salvation Army.
There you go. Go team, go.
M said, started on shoes. Joyce said, there are shoe stores near me that let you drop off old shoes. Have you seen one of those in your travels?
No, actually, I have not. I'll have to check that out because I haven't really seen anything like that.
And Dawn mentioned there's an organization, I don't know if they're nationwide, Green City Projects, who recycle shoes and clothes.
Okay.
We'll look for that. I'll look for that one.
Well, in NAPO National, at the national level, you used to donate to Souls for Souls. So S-O-L-E-S for S-O-U-L-S.
Nice.
And it was an organization that collected shoes. Thank you. Yes, she wrote it up there. They collect shoes and then donate them away, send them away to people. And they'll even take single shoes because they can match them up with other single shoes. Like, you know, they can get tennis shoes that are generally close and create a pair out of singles. And so if one of your shoes got destroyed, you can still donate the other one. And so it was a fundraiser that NAPO participated in several years.
Karen, who's with us on Facebook, said, I donated all of my office clothes since I am working from home, shoes too.
Woohoo!
Working from home is comfy. Oh, right? Yes, it is. I agree. And Nancy, also on Facebook, said, my youngest son wears size 17 shoes.
That is a platter. That is not a foot. That is a platter. I'm sorry. I can't even visualize bigger than Ed.
Well, and that's
crazy.
You know, when you're in that size range, you know, if you live in a medium-sized city, there might be one pair of shoes somewhere in a store in the city that fits you.
Right. Like,
I imagine he has to do a lot of online shopping.
A nightmare, I'm sure. Wow. Yeah, that would be some organizational challenging to manage a collection of size 17 shoes. Oh my gosh.
M shared, I discovered that the reason I wasn't using so many of my shoes is that they are too hard to get to the way I have them stored. I couldn't get to the ones that were nagging me to toss.
Oh, well, so I'm hoping that means that you dived in and found them and tossed them. Got them out of there.
Anita also said, I decluttered my boyfriend's closet, finally convinced him to get rid of totally out of style shorts and slacks.
And isn't that really the girlfriend's role? It's to update your boyfriend's style regularly. I think a lot of men get, style updates against their will, but good for you. You helped him get rid of some stuff. He's probably not going to remember it.
And Linda has an update in the comments. She said, post house fire, we have finally gotten everything out of the house. I intend to not let anything back into the new space unless it's worthy of me. Not sure how we could apply that to non-catastrophic situations, but I really like the concept. We have actually suggested to people to take the approach to pretend that you're preparing for your next move or a renovation or whatever it takes, whatever conjures the right sense of urgency and panic in you.
Yeah. And use that as a filter for it better not go back in. It has to go back in only if it passes a very high bar. And so as opposed to when somebody does a renovation in the kitchen, for instance, and they pull everything out, they box it and they put it out of the way. And then when the kitchen is done and they just do it in reverse and go and put it all back without thinking about it, you can do that moving process of box it up, unbox it, and do no filtering at all. But if you're going to touch everything anyway, you might as well filter it and only put back what makes sense to put back. It does require thinking. You do have to do some evaluation and prioritizing. You have to make choices. And so some people would prefer to throw it all back and not think about it and get it done. That's the distinction that we're making about pulling everything out and thinking about it. And like she said, it needs to be worthy to go back. And so you can do that in any situation where you, well, and we talked about Marie Kondo too, where that's the sort of the advocation that Marie Kondo is making when she says, clear out everything, pull all the clothes out, for instance, and empty the closet and make a huge pile of everything in the closet, and then only put back what is current value, what's important, what you want to keep, what your cat currently wear, and the rest of it stays out of the closet and gets put for donation. And so that house fire, you did the You did the house fire version of that by emptying the whole house. And now you're going to, you're declaring to us, and we're proud, that you're going to filter everything with a conscious thought process of, does it need to go back in the house? Do I actually want to have that there? Is it worthy of me putting it back in my space? And that will prevent you from, you know, restocking at full volume a house that didn't need to be at full volume. You can have only what you love in there. And I think that you will find that the house feels immensely different and so much more supportive. And it can change the way that you think about, we had a fire and that was traumatic and damaging, but the silver lining was that we emptied the house and reset it in a way that is 100% full of things that we love and nothing else. And that's going to be a major, like, you were forced to do a reset of the whole house, but I think you're going to be quite amazed by the result when you get to the end.
Linda also said, asking myself if I'm really going to do X again has helped me weed out lots of stuff.
Right? Like, you're done with that. That season of your life has passed. Yeah, it's a good filter. And a lot of people don't do that. It just sort of becomes nostalgic in their head. And then they keep things just because they remember using them. And like, that's not really a good enough reason to take up space. You can remember using them. And if you are, you know, 10 years away from hiking every weekend, or you don't snow ski anymore, or like the previous person who said they gave away all their clothes that they wore when they were teaching. If you're not teaching anymore that season of your life, and you're not discounting the season of your life by letting go of the stuff that supported it, you wore it when you needed it, and now you don't need it, and it can go on to its next iteration, and you don't have to be stocked for a task that you're no longer in charge of.
Marcy said, my husband is still upset that I convinced him to get rid of a 1980s bomber jacket. On the bright side, that you've also reduced his chances that younger people will make fun of him when he's out and about wearing it. Because the kids are ruthless.
They cannot make fun of his fashion faux pas. And, you know, I would say, you probably talked about, like, it's an old jacket and you don't want it, and you were insistent on having that conversation with him. And I would have probably intervened and said, if that is an important keepsake to him, then he's allowed to have a keepsake, and moved on to getting rid of other things. If he had a bomber jacket and 37 other things that were keepsakery, you know, we would then have to have a discussion about how much closet space is being surrendered to keepsakes. But, you know, I would have had that conversation and said, is this super important to you? Is this really, you know, it is not something you're wearing currently. It's just a keepsake. Is it important enough to keep and give up closet space to? And, you know, he might've won that one with me.
Karen said, a woman on Nextdoor said she is starting a new job and needed work clothes. A lot I don't need anymore are going to her. That's great.
Ooh, that's exactly what you know. That's like a, you know, direct, I'm helping you get better, and you know that it's going to get used right away, and awesome. That's got to be a good feeling.
Okay. We should probably get to our main topic.
Okay. Yeah. Y'all had lots to say about closets. Thank you.
Yeah. We'll come back to more comments as time permits.
Okay.
But let us talk about the main event.
Home office.
Working from home created unique clutter challenges even before the pandemic. But now, between sharing home workspaces with spouses and housemates, Zoom studios, kids' classrooms, etc., the rooms and spaces in our homes we dedicate to office work are under more stress than ever. Today, we're going to explore clutter issues in home offices and workspaces and offer strategies for seeking workspace, life space balance.
We're going to start today by talking about what we learned from our audience from this week's survey. They're so fascinating, and we really appreciate that you participate. 23% of the respondents say that they work entirely from home. So that to me was kind of a low percentage. I was surprised by that. About a third of the respondents never work from home, and the rest work some part of their time from home. Nearly everyone, like 97% of the people who answered, said that they do some kind of office work at home. So whether it's for business or personal reason, and that's not really surprising because just a few of us are fortunate enough that someone else is responsible for paying the bills. So we all have to do some kind of personal work at least. And so almost everybody is doing some kind of office work at home. From our question about where people do that office work, we found that 17% have a dedicated home office. That one was a big surprise to me, Ed. I have to say, I've had a dedicated home office since I was out of college. But I guess my job as an accountant meant that I needed a place to park my computer early on. Anyway, I was caught off guard about this really low percentage of dedicated home office spaces. And you've always had one too, right?
I have usually had a bedroom, you know, like a spare bedroom that doubled as the home office.
So it always had a bed in it, you mean?
Yeah. Or the only place I had really a completely dedicated home office was that house in the Heights.
Yes.
Where
we had the whole front room.
That whole front room. But that was when I had employees working in the house too.
Yeah. Well, so I just was surprised that 17% was a dedicated home office because that's always been true for me and my friends. And so I was surprised about that one.
I wonder too, whether it might reflect that, our audience is a lot of people who've moved to, have moved to smaller spaces I think maybe maybe a future survey will get some questions about, how much space do you have? That would be interesting to hear just to know what the average is for our
audience. Yeah. Okay. So the next one was for the question about where people do the office. 48% have set aside a dedicated space specifically for office work, but in a room that also serves other purposes. So this statistic made more sense to me. You truly can plop a desk almost anywhere that's there where there's enough room for it, and you add a chair and you've got a workspace. So adding it into a room that serves other functions totally makes sense to me. And the fact that half of the people are doing that wasn't a surprise.
But I think that also explains why the problem is as big as it is. It's with a dedicated home office. Well, plenty of people report problems with clutter in their reserved room, but it's even worse if the room shares other functions.
Yeah, exactly. There's too much going on in there. So 27% do office work in whatever space they can find or clear for the task. And I think this statistic reflects the more portable nature of our computers now. You can literally carry your computer around and your office is wherever you sit down. So it's not as supportive a solution for focusing on work, but you can get stuff done anywhere. And so 27% do it wherever they can find space.
You and I co-worked in Starbucks on plenty of occasions.
Especially early in the clutter-free days, we spent a lot of time in Starbucks having long conversations about the business. So yes, that is true. And then we had one person that reported having an office, but not being able to work there because it's too much of a disaster. So we hope that you're watching and that we can offer you some relief today. And on our statistical questions related to office work clutter, of the respondents who said that they have a dedicated office space, that's 17%, 87% reported a chronic clutter problem. And for people who do office work anywhere that they can make space, and that was, 27%. Of those people, 84% reported that it causes a clutter problem. And 100% of those people said it was a chronic problem. So the people that are floating around and sitting wherever mean that they're sort of taking a trail of clutter with them and leaving it behind, and that it's a chronic problem. So the portable and floating nature of their office workspace creates a chronic problem for them. And that doesn't surprise me either. So let's talk about your reported causes of office work clutter. These are the causes that you reported to us. Disorganization, especially when it comes to confusion between work and personal stuff. That was not a surprise. We create some of the clutter by not being able to separate what's truly paper related to doing work and what is the paper that's related to personal keepsakes. the next cause of office work clutter, paper, 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 of course. Keeping too much of it, not managing it effectively. I often find a paper clutter, it's a crazy mix of insurance policies and photos. Most people dump all of their paper together and then don't notice that the keepsake paper is a huge contributing factor to the clutter buildup. There's so much paper that stays around because it's a memory, and that means you want to keep it forever, but then it's an ever-growing mess that gets in the way of the work paper that you're actually trying to keep up with. Whether that's personal work, you know, your own bank statements, or whether it's actually work files and client-related work. Another cause is keeping too much stuff for the space available. We got that a lot. Crowding in the home office is no different than crowding anywhere else in the house. Too much stuff contributes to distress and also contributes to being distracted, especially when you're trying to focus to be productive. If there's a lot in your visual landscape, it's going to be very distracting, or you're going to end up putting a lot of energy into trying not to notice that it's very chaotic around you. Another cause is frequent interruptions and disruptions. Those frequent interruptions, and the first thing that came to my mind was somebody's working at home and their kids are interrupting all the time. At my house, it's the cats. At somebody else's house, it's going to be the kids or the spouse. I hear this a lot. You know, my husband comes in, he's underfoot all the time, and it's like, I'm working. Why are you standing in my doorway? So if you are getting interrupted a lot, managing your time to focus on work helps you manage the space well. Being often disrupted means that you lose track of where you are in a process or a thought, and that process leaves a clutter trail in its wake. So if you're in the middle of working on a project and someone interrupts you and you drop everything and stand up and go away or stop to answer their question and have to go rifle through more paper, then it starts to create this, it starts to create a pile that you then have to process again.
Besides those momentary interruptions, there are the bigger interruptions that disrupt continuity and momentum. You know, you get sick, you're sick for a few days, yes. And you
yes.
can't get, you know, you can't find your groove again. And the daily habits you'd established, you suddenly find yourself behind on those things, processing them. The mail piles up. The papers related to work you're working on pile up.
Go on vacation, same thing.
Oh, vacation, same thing. Mm-hmm, and, you know, vacation, I almost dread vacation because there's the period you spend preparing for vacation. Then there's the vacation itself. And then there's the period you spend recovering from vacation. It was not as bad before I was self-employed, but
yeah, man. But now it is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so another cause is oversupplying with office supplies and office equipment. The older we are, the more we love office supplies, mostly because we remember a time when there were no computers and office supplies were absolutely necessary for everything. But we don't actually need many of them anymore. If you think about it, we carry our computers around, we carry our phones around, and all that office supply stuff that we keep, it's just not necessary. It's more necessary if you're actually going to an office to do work. There's a little bit more need for some office supplies, but even in that environment, there's so much that's computer related now that you don't need the same level of office supplies that you used to. And so we have a lot of them that we're not actually using because we think they're cool. And the perfect example to me is pens and highlighters. Like every home office that I'm in has 900,000 pens and highlighters because the next set of colors comes out or that style of pen is cool and you buy another box and everyone is drowning in pens like shampoo bottles in the bathroom. You can't use pens up fast enough. It takes so long to finish a pen, to run out of ink or to have it dry up. And you have way more pens than you ever use in your lifetime. So you got to figure out a place that makes sense to use them or a place, you know, like a school or an office or a volunteer situation where they need a bunch of pens because you do not have Yeah, we're going to be throwing pins away after you die. I'm just telling you that right now.
Lorraine asked, how many pins should we keep? That almost sounds like, you know, a philosophical question.
Right. How many pins is enough? At what point is the pin collection at Zen level?
Michelle says 10. I think that, I don't know if there's reasoning behind that or if it was just an arbitrary number that sounded good.
Lorraine says is 100 too many. Yes, I think, you know, that's a personal preference thing. 100 seems like a lot.
100 sounds a little excessive.
But, you know, and then people get their craft pins mixed in with their office pins.
Ooh.
So there's, you know, that whole like colored pencil and colored pen thing that's about being crafty versus the pins that you use to like take notes and write things down. And those are really two separate populations. And when they get mixed in together, it just makes the, you know, the pen supply get in the way. And it's not just about office supplies here. We also keep equipment that we don't need because it's a hassle to get rid of it, or we've upgraded it or whatever. And then we don't take the old equipment out and actually get it out. And so I promise you right now, somewhere in your office is a piece of equipment sitting on the floor or sitting on a table or on a bookshelf that you used to use like crazy and now you never use, and it's been needing to go for forever. And if you can get rid of it, you will be surprised at how much space you have. It's something to try to identify and remove quickly.
Karen said, I found a package with 10 small paperclip boxes and then found another. Where do you donate these? I don't need that many.
Yeah.
Art Asylum, Texas Art Asylum takes all kinds of office supplies, do they not?
They do.
Pretty much anything office in the office supply category.
Yes. And then, so they're making that stuff available to teachers.
Right.
But you can go and donate them at the local elementary school. If you don't want to go to Texas Art Asylum, you can find the local school and go down to the school and give it into the school. Take it to the church office. Take it to the, you know, dentist office. You can take it to anywhere where somebody's doing business and let them have it.
And for those in the Houston area, Texas Art Asylum, which is at texasartasylum.com, mm-hmm. they are in the, they're on Live Oak Street. Wait, is that?
That's right. That's correct.
Yeah, okay. South, which is sort of just south of downtown.
Yeah, like and, southeast of downtown.
Southeast of downtown. Mm-hmm. And if you visit their website, you can see a list of what they will take and also the dates during which they're open for donations, because they're not open for donations all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you schedule an appointment, but it's a great way to get rid of all this excess office supplies we're talking about. And then they're going to put it in front of a passing collection of teachers who basically buy it for $5 a bag. And so then they can get a whole bunch of supplies that they need for a classroom for really inexpensive. So it's a good way to repurpose that stuff.
And if you're not in Houston, you know, go to your favorite search engine and put in creative reuse and the name of the place where you live, because there are creative reuse centers all over the United States and at least a few in Europe, which are places like Texas Art Asylum that collect office supplies, art supplies, craft
for
supplies.
For recycling, upcycling,
yeah.
Reuse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For people to turn your junk into art and such.
And such. Okay. We also asked participants to rank a few common factors that contribute to clutter in this space. And here's what we found. The number one answer for, you know, things that contribute to clutter is work-related paper, of course, which was a factor for 74% of the people. After that, the top answers were non-work related stuff. So things in the home office that were not actually about work. And that was 63%. Office supplies was 51%. Electronics and equipment required for work, 49%. And decorative and personal items, 42%. So these are all things that are making the clutter in your home office work. And, you know, A, process the paper, B, get rid of the personal items, C, get rid of the office supplies, and get rid of the extra equipment. And you've gotten a huge amount of the clutter in the home office out of there. We did get some commentary about the negative effects. in our survey responses. Selena said, I tend to get down to things more reluctantly when I have my desk and chair terribly messy. So she's having trouble getting started because the desk is messy. Also, I get discouraged to do other stuff because in my head, I have this comment, which is, why bother if that's not clear either, thought. So I guess if the office isn't clear, then why bother with the other stuff? Because it's a mess too. And why bother with anything else? In office work, even more than in most aspects of our lives, clutter reduces the bandwidth we have available to do the work we need to get done. And so once you reach overwhelm anywhere, that overwhelm sort of translates everywhere, is really sort of how I'm reading what Selena is saying here. She gets overwhelmed by her desk, and that translates to overwhelm everywhere else. And then she can't get anything done anywhere, which is too bad. It is definitely a negative effect. And the other kinds of things, you know, the bills don't get paid on time because you've lost the bills in the desk. You can't find important things like, where's your password, or where's your passport, or where's your social security card? There's all kinds of paper that you actually want to be able to find. And if it's just sort of floating in the sea of personal and work-related paper in your office, putting your hand on it becomes a much more difficult task. And I have found a lot of important papers in sorting big piles of paper mess, and found in the middle of it something super, super important. Oh my gosh, I've been looking for that. I had no idea where that was. So the people that leave the paper to be out, they leave it out so they can find it. Then they have a whole bunch of things out, and then they can't find any of it because it's all just part of the sea. It's all part of the tidal wash that is the paper going back and forth in your office. So figuring out where those important papers are and finding a parking space to put them in so that they're always somewhere that you know. I have one folder that says important documents on it. And in that important documents is, here's my voter card, and here's my passport, and here's my social security card, and here's my fill in the blank. There's other stuff that's my birth certificate, my mother's death certificate, all kinds of stuff like that. Those things are things that you want, and you don't actually need them all at once or regularly, but they're important enough that you need to be able to put your hands on them when you actually have to find them. And so not letting those things float around in the paper sea that is your office, identifying them and giving them a place to live is super important. I think that parking theory, the idea of finding a parking space for everything, is really gets lost in the paper sorting process. There's a lot of paper in your office that is temporary and not necessary to keep forever, except that somehow once we print it on a piece of paper, it seems super, super valuable. But evaluating that paper for it's a keepsake, and separating keepsakes out of the pile, like getting that. If you're only keeping it for a memory, then keeping it out of the mix is important, and pulling those things aside. And then you're left with paper that isn't a keepsake. It's functional paper. And then you have to ask yourself, okay, so if this is an insurance policy that's from 2 years ago, and I've already renewed my insurance twice since then, this policy can go. I don't need to keep that piece of paper. I have the current policy instead. This is a tax return. This is support for a tax return. And those are things that are important to keep, but they don't have to be part of your working set of paper. You're keeping tax returns and the support for those tax returns against the potential to be audited. So you can gather that stuff up, and you can label it and box it and go put the box in a closet somewhere, because the only reason you're gonna have to touch that paper again is if somebody declares that they need to audit you, and you got to prove the numbers that you put on your return. So getting those papers out of your way and not part of your daily paper shuffle means that there's that much paper, less paper to deal with. Going through all that paper and identifying the piles of paper and what to do with them is the major exercise of dealing with a home office. And there are categories of paper that make people nervous because they feel like they don't understand what to do about it. And so if you let that worry shut you down from all the paper processing, you're not going to make much headway. There's probably some things that you don't know the answer to, but there's probably plenty of things that you do absolutely know the answer to. Like, this is a piece of trash. I can recycle this. And so if you just go through the paper and separate, I know this is trash recycling or shredding, fill in the blank, whichever it applies to. I know this is paper that can leave versus this is paper that has to stay. That will at least reduce the volume of paper by a huge percentage. And when I do that with people, they're always quite stunned with how small the keep pile is floating around in amongst all the other stuff that could be thrown away or recycled. Do you have something, Ed? You have that look on your face.
Yeah. I wanted to mention that, you know, in answer to our question about negative effects, a lot of what people said was sort of negative effects that we hear related to every type of clutter. But there are a couple that sort of caught my eye that I wanted to mention. One of the respondents said, desk is in the living room and don't have friends over because it's cluttered. Can't shut a door to hide it. So for the half of our audience who said their dedicated space is somewhere else, is in a space that shares other functions, obviously that's where we're getting out of balance, you know. Mm-hmm. Life and the needs of work are at odds with one another.
Well, and I will tell you, everyone is hiding a cluttered desk somewhere in their life. So don't let that be why you don't have friends over, because you know they have a desk in their house that looks just like that. So you don't need to be ashamed about it. It's like everybody has some kind of space that they're using that is not as perfect and pristine as they would want it. And any office that actually gets used versus is just a showpiece in a show house that is all clean and perfect because ain't nobody actually sitting there to work, then, you know, everybody has that workspace in their house somewhere. And so please don't let that be why you don't have friends over, because they will not be surprised. You can straighten it up a little bit. You can put some things in a box next to the desk. You can throw a sheet over the top of the desk if you want. But don't let that be the reason that you don't let people in the house, because they have their own space of mess.
And then one of our respondents said, the workspace is in my living room, so I can see it even when I'm not working. My inquisitive cat needs supervision, or he gets into the workspace and messes with the equipment. I also think there's an emotional cost to having your workspace in a place that you see even when it's not work hours or hours that you've decided to spend working. And so I think it's really important to find a way to hide it from yourself at least a little bit. Have bins that some of the stuff can go into and be tucked away, or have, like you said, throw a sheet over it, put a room divider in front of it.
Put a screen up. Like, it would be totally worth it if it's mentally getting in your way because you can't tune it out when you're not working. That screen or sheet or curtain all would make it helpful to tune it out a little bit and let you let go and unplug at the end of the day.
And then more than one person said, I don't want to go in the office. There's a negative connotation of overwhelm.
We all want to be having fun, right? Instead of gorking. And the home office, that dedicated workspace represents working. And so it's like going to the office. You used to hate going to the office part of the time, like wake up in the morning. Oh God, I got to go to work. Right. So there is that whole, I'm have to sit down and focus on work now. For a lot of people, the work that they're doing isn't something they think of as fun or entertaining. And so they're choosing to go and do something that is by definition work instead of play. And so, yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised that there's a negative connotation with going in that home office.
Michelle answered my question about how she came up with 10. She said, the only pen I use is the posh one in my handbag. One for clients to use and one for the shopping list, but they come in packs of 10. So more than that is too much.
There you go. One pack's worth.
Black pens only, maybe a few pretty colors, but that's more craft than office.
Right, exactly. And so the craft pins can live somewhere else.
I have my one pack of blue pens. My color is blue because in my first really serious job as a typesetter, typesetters used blue, proofreaders used red, and quality control used green, and then equipment operators used black. And so blue has been my pen color ever since.
It's interesting that it was a dedicated
funny
it
that
was
the
a job
stick like that.
Yeah, like it was job related, though, that it was like you guys had assigned colors to make the job function correct.
Well, it made it made it really easy to read the job ticket where, you know, we initialed and wrote down time and such.
Yeah.
And said, this seems like a perfect time of year to donate office supplies to schools, art supply places, etc. You're reminding me that my church has a thrift shop.
Oh, there you go.
That's probably a really good one. And a lot of churches, I think, have at least a small.
Yeah. Some kind of exchange.
They operate. Yeah. M said, I hadn't thought of taking art/craft pens out of the office. Amazing.
Right? Take your craft supplies and put them where crafts are happening. Don't leave them in the office. Yeah. It is funny that I see categories where other people don't. And I find that that's one of the things that I give to people when I'm working with them is the idea of, oh, well, you have more than one category of stuff here. This is related to your office, but this stuff isn't related to your office. And so it's a category of things we can subset and move somewhere else and create a bunch of space that way. And often people are surprised. They just don't think about it that way until I suggest it.
Catherine asked, anyone else have troubles with old calendars and catalogs?
Isn't that funny? Calendars in particular.
Those things full of pretty colored pictures that you hate to just scrap after the calendar's usefulness has expired. Used to be any preschool would take them for art projects, but there seem to be fewer of those these days.
Yeah. And it is something that is good for a creative reuse center like Texas Art Asylum, because they like the graphics of the calendar with the little dates, and they also cut up, reuse the pictures. And so that's a place to take them. But there is something about you use the calendar and you make notes in it all year long, and it feels like it's kind of a diary almost of your life. And so you put a bunch of energy into using it, and then you get to the end of the year and it's like, oh, all my energy is going in the recycle bin. It feels real weird. Calendars are hard for a lot of people to release. And I have often segregated collections of calendars that people were not willing to release. But it becomes a keepsake because it feels like, oh, that has a record of all the things that I did in my life and in the calendar. And then they don't want to throw it out. And so it becomes a keepsake and it has to be removed.
Catherine said, I gave mine finally to the rec therapy department at Easter Seals, Greater Houston.
Oh, great idea. That's probably
terrific.
A great
yeah.
place for it.
Yeah.
Good job.
Okay. I want to make a quick announcement and then we probably have time for a couple more comments before we get
tittle.
To the end. Yes. I want to say a special thank you to Jimmy for becoming our newest Patreon supporter.
Thank you, Jimmy.
If you would like to help support our efforts with a recurring monthly donation of any size, please visit cfhou.com/Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Your contributions help us offset the cost of producing the weekly webcast and podcast, and will help us fund new projects that we have in the works. Thank you for your support, Jimmy, and all our generous underwriters.
We appreciate you so much.
We do. It's really wonderful. And I'll also take this moment to say thank you to everyone who listens to our podcast and who is tolerating or at least, living with the ads that we are now allowing them to put in our podcast, because it's a nice little extra source of funding for us. And I hope they are not too objectionable. We try to break it up with chapter marks so that they at least don't stick an ad right in the middle of one of us talking.
Right.
Michelle said, the main clutter in my office is the old tower PC, screen, speakers, and keyboard. I only use my laptop now. They have been in a big pile in the corner of the office since I moved 18 months ago. I need to get around to transferring the data and cleaning the hard drive before I pass it on, but it's one of those jobs I never get around to.
Right.
I'm not sure where to send it when it's done.
I think you should find a computer store and take it to the computer store and let them download the data, wipe the computer. Like, if you know that you're never going to get to it because it's too much of a hassle, or it doesn't sound like fun, or you don't think you can finish it, whatever, give that task to someone else and pay them to do it. And then you can take it to electronic recycling. So if they have wiped the hard drive, then you can just go and donate to electronic recycling and let it go and let it be reclaimed. They take the metals out, they recycle the plastic, that kind of stuff. So it's worth the effort. And if it's a chore that, you know, a lot of us are like, we feel like we need to clear the hard drive or gather stuff out of it, but then we don't actually do it. And so maybe we don't feel up to the task. Maybe we don't feel like we know enough to know to do it correctly. So if it's worth keeping because you want stuff off the computer, or you want to make sure that it's safe or clear to dispose of, then it's worth making it an errand and going handing it to somebody else to let them do it.
Well, and on that topic, Kat mentioned you can scan things into a designated cloud storage or external hard drive. So I guess when you take it to that place, you can either take them a device and say, put the contents here.
Yeah.
Or have them make it available to you on Dropbox or whatever, mm-hmm. Cloud storage you have access to.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's a chore that hangs up a lot of people because we all have towers in our past that have stuff on them, and we're sure it's important, but then we can't, either it's not working anymore, or it's too slow to load it up, or we can't find the plug, or whatever. There's a million reasons why the tower ends up in the corner, and you've long since replaced it with a laptop, and so that tower sits over there and gets ignored, and it's really a chore that requires you running an errand to a computer repair place and say, please boot this thing up. They have a million cords. They can find a plug that works. Boot this thing up, get the data off of it, give it to me in what fill in the blank form, whatever form you prefer, and then wipe the hard drive. And, you know, some of them may actually dispose of it there, or they will give it back to you, but then it'll be clean and you can feel comfortable about going straight to electronic recycling and dumping it off. And so give it a shot.
All right. We will be back next week. That is Tuesday. What's the date? August 9th? Yes.
Yes.
August 9th at noon U.S. Central Time, the usual time. And our topic is going to be the common areas of your house, the living room, the family room, the den, whatever you call it, the places that are shared by everyone in the household and that tend to serve lots and lots of different purposes, entertaining.
Right. The primary of her purpose, though, being relaxing and entertaining the family.
Relaxing, entertaining, TV watching, book reading, et cetera. We're going to talk about common spaces next week. Let's talk tittle.
Okay. So this week's tittle is clear space to work. This week's assignment is to clear the surface of the primary place where you carry out office work tasks. In other words, your desktop, your dedicated work surface, or any place that work materials have sort of taken over your space. You want to start by throwing out the trash, collecting recycling, returning unused coffee mugs to the kitchen. You know, there's food-related shrapnel somewhere near where you're working from home. So take all that stuff out. Take anything that belongs elsewhere in your home back to its rightful place. So, you know, here's the bathrobe that you brought in. Here's the extra pair of pants that are in there for some reason. Here is the crafty stuff that migrated into the home office by accident. Here's your kids, you know, book bag, whatever it is that doesn't belong in there, take it out and put it where it's supposed to go instead. Gather any paper that needs filing. If you've allotted enough time to do it, you can file it right now, but otherwise set it aside and with a clear label. This is, you know, needs to be filed. to indicate that it needs to be filed at some point as a project. And you can sit down with your file cabinet, file drawer, fill in the blank, and do filing as a separate project. Right now, we want you to focus on clearing the work surface. Reduce the volume of personal or decorative items on your work surface. It's okay to have a few cherished items because you want things to inspire you or energize your work, but anything else should be assigned a new home elsewhere. Let's try to minimize the visual distractions that are on your work surface so that it'll be easier for you to focus. Create a parking space for current work projects. So anything that you're picking up and working on every day and not completing, so you're coming back to it over and over again, those current work projects need a parking space. So find a rack that sits on the top of the desk or a box next to the desk or some kind of a bin or a drawer, wherever you want to park those things, create a space that at the end of the day, you can take the things that you're working with, all of the pieces of it, and put it in its parking space for the night. That will help with the sensation of looking at the desk and feeling like it's really cluttered or reminding you about work. If you sort of have that physical moment of closing the book, basically, and putting the book on the bookshelf, putting it in its parking space, it'll feel a little bit more like you've turned off and left your office for the night. Don't forget to check the floor right around the workspace too. It's likely you've been dropping things near the desk on the floor, and those need to be included in whatever kind of refresh you do for the desk area. So give it a shot. And we're focusing on the desk area here because I know doing the home office, the whole office and all of the paper and all the clutter in there, that's more of a project than a tittle. So the right. tittle is about the desk so that it's a smaller space and it is focusing on the area that you are using every day to do work. And we're hoping to improve that area for you instead. Okay. So good luck with that. And we'll wait to hear back from you next week about how it goes.
The chat was very lively today. Lots of great questions and lots of talk about paper. And so we have done lots of shows about paper, but it might be time for another one coming soon. So we're we'll dig deeper into paper in a coming show. And Connie asked, did we already talk about managing digital office clutter? We did not, but it's probably about time for us to revisit that topic too, because it's been quite a while since we talked about digital clutter, not just digital office clutter, but your photos, your personal email, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then Catherine asked, that reminds me, who takes old cords? I can't remember what most originally plugged into. Do you know any place for that? I don't think.
Well, I tend to take those cords with me to the electronic recycling, but I can't guarantee that they're trying to recycle them and maybe just trashing them.
I would hope that if you take it to electronics recycling, they can at least
recycle the plastic.
Well, more likely recycle the metals.
Oh, there's wire. There's wire inside. On the inside. Yeah. So maybe they're stripping it to claim the wire.
And in Houston, does West Park still take electronics? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. The West Park Recycling Center in Houston is the place to go. Okay. We are out of time. So let me just finish by saying, if you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/Facebook. We had lots of Facebook activity today. Or subscribe to our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We'd love to hear from you, so please send us your questions, comments, and topic suggestions in YouTube comments, on Facebook, or anywhere else that you find us. You can always reach us through our website at clutterfairyhouston.com.
Clutterfairyhouston.com. Still. Oh, thank you. I like my necklace too. Thank you. It was a gift. Thanks, you guys. It was great to see everybody, and we will see you when we're ready to talk about common spaces. We'll talk to you about common spaces next week. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.